In Masechtas Nedarim, we are going to start from the third to last line on the bottom of Nun Amud Beis. So the Gemara beforehand just told a story that Bar Kafra was not invited to the chasana Rebbe was making for his son. And he said a line that sounded like it was a little bit insulting. Then Rebbe invited him and he changed it to be a compliment for Rebbe. But that story really ties into this next Gemara that we're about to do. So we'll pick up right now from again the middle of the line, the third to last line at the bottom of Nun Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Yoimo de Mechayech by Rebbe Asher Pernuso La'alma. On any day that Rebbe would smile or laugh, there would be trouble for the world. Okay, so yeah, just to put things in perspective, Rebbe was very, very wealthy. Was one of the wealthier people in the world. He was a very wealthy person, and this, his era that he lived in was right after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So, and he was the Nasi. So it was incumbent on him to feel the tsar of Klal Yisrael. It would be right after, you know, a major catastrophe, and if Rebbe would laugh, people would interpret that as though Rebbe didn't care about the destruction of the world, didn't care about Yiddishkeit, didn't care about Klal Yisrael. So therefore, it was, even though it wasn't necessarily a contradiction to the fact that Rebbe was allowed to laugh per se, but it was interpreted, if Rebbe was smiling, people would say, oh, Rebbe doesn't really care, he has everything he needs, he doesn't care about whatever else is going on in the world. And therefore, this statement, that's what the basis of this statement in the Gemara is. And Rebbe knew that. Rebbe knew that as well, that it was incumbent upon him to feel the tsar, and he did feel the tsar. But even a laugh would be a problem for the world. Okay, so Amar Leh LeBar Kafra, so he said, Rebbe told Bar Kafra, Lo Yitabad Dichon, don't make me laugh. Ve'avino Lucha Arbo Guru Yechiten, and if you make sure not to make me laugh, I'll pay you 4 measurements of wheat. Now Bar Kafra was apparently in those times a Badchin, somebody who, his job was to make people laugh, to make people happy. So therefore, Rebbe said, I'll pay you enough to, I guess, the equivalent of a year's salary or something like that to make sure that I do not laugh. Amale. So Bar Kafra said, Lichsi Mar, you'll see, the kol, now I'm on the top of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, the kol Giura de Be'ina Shakilna, whatever shear and whatever amount I will actually collect. I'm going to collect whatever I want. How's this? Shokol di kulo, he took a basket of woven maybe out of palm leaves or whatever. He took a woven basket, a rabba, a large one. Chafya kufra, he smeared it with tar to make sure that none of the seeds fall out through the cracks. The sechafya areshe, and he put it on his head. The Marsha explains he put it on top of his head so that Rebbe would not recognize that it was him. And he went and he told Rebbe, Lecho li mar arboin giru yachita. Pay me, go, I'm here to collect my 4 measurements of wheat, the Rishinabach, that you owe me. Okay? So it's actually a very interesting machlekes Rishonim, what the word Darshinabach means, but I'm going with the translation that, I guess, in between Rashi and the Ran, that you owe me this money. So Ochuch Rebbe. So Rebbe ended up laughing as a result. He thought this was very funny. So Amar Leh, so Rebbe said, Lava Zarticho Deloy Tabadchin, didn't I expressly warn you not to make me laugh? Amar Leh, Chita Darshinacha Kanasivna. I meant the wheat that you owe me. Apparently, you know, either this was true, either he said this to make Rebbe laugh, or he actually did owe Rebbe, he owed him some other wheat. He says, I'm here to collect the other wheat. You're right. The fact that I made you laugh, I no longer am entitled to collect that wheat that you promised me not to make you laugh. So I'm not here to collect that wheat. I'm here to collect the other wheat that you owe me. Okay? Or there are those that say that he's here, I'm here to collect directly from you, as opposed to from your family. Whatever, there's a lot of drushes. And over here, even though the Gemara starts off with this statement that any time that Rebbe laughed, it was bad for the world. Bar Kafra, without going into all the different pshatim over here, but Bar Kafra had a different cheshbin of why he felt it was necessary for Rebbe to laugh. Obviously, he wasn't here to try to make trouble in the world, and he wasn't here to go against what Rebbe told him, but he had a different shita about whether or not it was permissible for Rebbe to laugh. So he wasn't, again, he wasn't doing it lahachis. He wasn't doing it to get Rebbe into trouble. He felt that it was the right thing for him to do, for him to make Rebbe laugh. Okay, so that's the first story that the Gemara gives, the relationship between Rebbe and Bar Kafra. Now the Gemara continues, as we said before, that there was a chasana that Rebbe did or didn't invite Bar Kafra to. So now the Gemara says, the Gemara continues on that note and says as follows. Omer le Bar Kafra le barte de Rebbe. So Bar Kafra told the daughter of Rebbe, le machar shasina chamra birikuda da avuch, tomorrow I'm going to drink chamra's wine while your father is dancing, ubekirkani de imech. And with, okay, so the way the Ran learns is that also your mother is going to be dancing and singing. The Rashi learns that kirkune de imech means that your mother is going to give me some wine, as we'll see in the story, as the story follows. Okay, on the Ran that says that while your mother is singing and dancing, so of course all the Mefarshim ask on the Ran, how could that possibly be mutter for Bar Kafra to expect that this woman is going to be dancing for him? So they, well, the basic answer is that Bar Kafra was at a point and at a stage in his life that it was not going to impact him whatsoever. So the only isser is because it's going to create some hirurim and what person is going to think. So Bar Kafra was beyond that. It was not necessary for him to worry about it. Again, but if you learn like the Ran's pshat, if you learn like Rashi's pshat, that she simply was going to hand him the wine, then we don't have the kolisha. We don't have the kolisha problem, and then we have a different problem. We have a different issue with. So, since when are you allowed to ask other women, especially married women, to hand you wine, which is beferish the Gemara? I think in either, I think it's in Kedushin, says that you're not supposed to be mishamish with other people's wives. So, meaning you're not even supposed to use them as their service to serve you. So there, the Mefarshim explain that she didn't hand him the wine directly. She handed it to her husband, she put it down on a table, whatever the answer is. Okay, in any event, he said that these things are going to happen tomorrow, because he knew at the chasana he was going to meet them. Alright, so now the Gemara tells the story. Ben Alosha, Chasne de Rebbe Havi. Ben Alosha was the son-in-law of Rebbe, the Osher Gadolu Havi, and he was very rich. Azmanei Lebei Hilulo de Reb Shimon Berebi. So he was invited to the wedding of Reb Shimon Berebi, which, that sentence, that confuses me a little bit. Of course he was invited, he was the son-in-law, but apparently that was, the Gemara has to point out that he was invited, that he came to the Chasne of Reb Shimon Berebi, the son of Rebbe. Okay, his supposed brother-in-law. Amalei Bar Kafra le Rebbe. Okay, so this is how the story gets started. So Bar Kafra says to Rebbe, "My toyeva." What does the word toyeva mean? Now, the word toyeva over here that we're talking about in the context is of Mishkav Zachar specifically. So, why does the Torah use the word toyeva? So, kol de amalei Rebbe de hachenhu toyeva. Anything that Rebbe tried to suggest as the explanation of why the Torah used the word Ta'eva, Parucha Bar Kafra was able to shrug him up and say, no, that's not the real pshat. Amar Lei, so finally Rebbe said, Parshayat, okay, why don't you explain it? Amar Lei, Tesi Devischu, bring me your wife, Tirmili Natla Achas, bring me, is that, and she should bring with her, bring to me, or one cup. One cup over here, one cup means a cup of wine. Ramulate, so she gave it to her. So, by the way, this is already the fulfillment of his prediction that he told the daughter that your mother is going to hand me the cup of wine. Amalei the Rebbe. So then he said to Rebbe, Kum rekoidli, you should dance for the emeloch, and then I'll tell you what the pshat is. Hachi yamar achmana, the reason why the Torah used the word te'eva, hachi yamar achmana, the Torah used the word te'eva, toya, Ata boss. It's an atrikon. It's an abbreviation for the fact that people are making a mistake. They're just very confused. Mishkav Zachar is not a natural thing. There's no reason for it. There's no excuse for it. It's not natural. So therefore, the person who does this, is involved with this, is making a mistake. Doesn't understand what they're doing. L'kosa achrina, for the next cup of wine, amar lei, so again Bar Kafra said, my tevel. Why does the Torah use the word tevel? This is talking about, again, this is achrin l'achleikas rishonim, but let's go with the Ran's pshat that we're talking about in the context of when a woman allows an animal to have relations with her. So why does the Torah use the word tevel? Amar lei, kinyan akadma. So Rebbe did the same thing that happened before. Meaning the Rebbe tried to give many suggestions and Bar Kafra said each one of them don't work. So Amalei, so finally Bar Kafra said, Ovid li the Omer Loch. Do for me and then I'll tell you. Meaning do the same thing you did before. Bring your wife, she should bring me a cup of wine and you should dance, and then I'll tell you the answer. Ovid, he did these things. Amalei, Tevel who, it's the reason why the Torah uses the word Tevelin. Tavlin Yeshba. Is there any spice in this? Mishan yahada bia min kulo in biyos. Is there anything different about this bia than any other bia? In other words, what's so special about this? That's why the Torah uses the word tevel, meaning it's similar to the same word as the word of spices. There's no spice over here. There's nothing extra about this. There's no reason for it. And that's what the Torah is complaining. There's no reason, there's no excuse for what the person, or the way the Ran's learning, what this woman is doing. Amalei, my zima, and finally he asks him, what's the word zima? Zima, the way the Ran learns, is in the context of when a woman, somebody is mizana, to the point where she doesn't even know who her children are, she doesn't know who the father of the children is. Why does the Torah use that, why does the Torah use that word? Amalei, Ovid, ki inyana kadma. So again, Bar Kafra said, do the same thing, that the same process that we did last time. Ovid, he did it, Amalei, and he told him, zu mahi, again, the word zima is an abbreviation of all the different words. Zu mahi, what are you doing? Pasha pshat is, she doesn't even know who the kid is. Zu, the child, she doesn't know who the child is from because she's mizana so much. Then the Gemara finishes the story and says, La Yachol ben Alosha lemizbo. Ben Alosha was not able to handle the bezoyin that Rebbe was getting at this chasana. He wasn't able to come. He got up. The nafak hu ve'intse mitamon. He and his wife got up and they left. Now, for the covet of Rebbe, they got up and they left the chasana because he did not appreciate the way Rebbe was being treated by Bar Kafra. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "My ben Alosha," which is a very funny loshen. What is ben Alosha? Why ben Alosha? What is ben Alosha? So again, there's a lot of different mefarshim over here of why what the Gemara is asking. But let's just say the simple pshat based on what we just said before. We said that ben Alosha got up. He was so upset by the way Rebbe was being treated that he got up and left. So we want to know, who is this ben Alosha person? Why did this upset him more than anybody else? The Tanya we learned in a Braisa, loy lechinam pizer ben Alosha es ma'isov. It wasn't for naught. It wasn't just without a control that ben Alosha spent a lot of money. Ella laharis behen tespirish shel kohen gadol. Rather, he wanted to see how to give a proper haircut to a Kohen Gadol. Now the haircut for a Kohen Gadol is a very special haircut. Dichsiv, because the Pasuk says, Kusoyim yichasmu es reishayim, that they should cut their hair in a covering. Tana, and we learned in a Braisa, Ke'ein lulinois, the haircut was like a lulinois. My lulinois, so the Gemara already asks, what is lulinois, what is this, what type of special haircut is this? I'm Rabbi Yehuda, tisparta yichido, it's a very unique type of haircut. Hey Chidami, what's unique about it? Amarava, Roisha Shalzeh, Bitzad Ikroi Shalzeh, that each hair, the end of each hair should end right at the tip of the growing of where the root of the next hair on his head was. So it's, in other words, it wasn't shaved bald and it wasn't let long. It was rather it was one here next to the next. Although there was other mafarshim say very interesting pshatim that it was his front here would touch the back here. In other words, he would have like what we call a comb over where the Kohen Gadol would have like hair that would go from the front all the way to the back, and that would touch the roots on the back of his head, or something like that, which is also a very interesting pshat. But the pasuk pshat that most people learn is that the tip of one hair should touch the next hair. This way it looks like he has hair, it looks like the hair on his head is like one piece, because it's all exactly the same size. This is the haircut of the Kohen Gadol. So this is the Pashup Shat, that the point was that Ben Alasha was a very rich, wealthy person. And the proof to that he was a wealthy person, this is the way the Ran learns, so the proof that he was a wealthy person was the fact that he was able to spend money on figuring out how to learn how to do this very difficult, precise type of haircut. So according to the other pshat, that, you know, why was he so makbid on Rebbe's kavod, you add a little knetch over here and you say, you see that he was a person who was makbid on mitzvahs. He wasn't just this wealthy person who just all he cared about was his own kavod, but rather he was somebody who cared about mitzvahs. He was willing to spend money on mitzvahs. So therefore we see that it was appropriate for him to be makbid for Rebbe's kavod. I saw one very interesting note over here, that usually we have a rule that there's, when we refer to somebody by the reference to their father, that means that really their father was the important person, and they were just the son of this important person, right? Usually Rava is Rava himself. And then we have other people in the Gemara that are referred to as Ben or Bar or somebody else. So over here is referred to Ben Alasha. So I saw an interesting shot that really his father was the wealthy person. Well, he wasn't independently wealthy. He was wealthy because his father was wealthy. And therefore, like children of wealthy parents, they go and they spend money on things because they don't have the value of money, because they didn't earn it themselves. They're using other people's money. And that's why the Gemara uses the word pizer, Ben Alasha, that he went crazy spending money on something. Now, the Gemara doesn't mean it in a negative way, because over here he was spending money on learning how to do the proper haircut for a Kohen Gadol, and Ben Alasha potentially was a Kohen. So it wasn't a crazy idea for him to be spending the money, but I thought it was very interesting how the Gemara is also like hinting to the fact that, you know, just because people who didn't earn the money themselves don't have the right attitude and respect for the earning of the money, they're willing to spend money on things. What? So that takes us to the end of the relationship with Rebbe and Bar Kafra. So now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah, Ubedalas Haramutza. It says you have this type of, well, we're going to see in a moment, the Gemara is going to try to tell us what this Dalas Haramutza is, but the Pashut Pshat is, it's this type of gourd, maybe whatever, a pumpkin of some sort, that comes from Ramutza. We'll see in a second. My Dalas Ramutza, the Gemara says, what is this Dalas Ramutza? Omar Shmuel Kro Karkuzoi. It's a gourd from this place, Karkuzoi. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. Dalas Hatmuna Beremetz. It's a type of gourd that's only edible after you stick it into the coals, has to burn out in the coals, and then it's edible. Okay, so in other words, it's not from a name of a place, but rather it's a process. So Esve Ravina Laravashi, so Ravina Asakashu? Rav Nechemi told us the las aramis, he the las hamitzris, so fine, las aramis is a ram. Kalayim im hayavonis, and these type of cucumbers or pumpkins are kalayim with kalayim hayavonis, kalayim im aramutza. And it's kalayim with a ramutza. So we see tiyufta. So we see that ramutza is not a process, but rather it's a type of pumpkin, by the fact that we refer to it as kalayim to another type of pumpkin or dalas, whatever, however you want to translate it. So we see that it is a type. It's from a place. It's a known type of cucumber, not a process, and that's why the Gemara asks it as a tiyufta. Okay, so now we know what that is. Now, just as a reminder, what is this relevant to our Gemara? Where does this come in? This comes in as one of those things that when a person says that they are making a neder not to eat a tavshil, this is not considered a tavshil. This is something that is eaten by itself. It's not eaten together with bread, or it's not eaten with other things. Okay, just to bring it back into the Mishnah that's relevant. Now, What we have over here is the next Mishnah. It's actually very fascinating, and the fact that the Mefarshim talk about this is pretty amazing. It says, and I'll read it to you, and it should immediately shock you. It says, the Mishnah says, Hanoider mi maisa kedeir, somebody makes a neder not to eat from things that are cooked, ena aser ela mi maisa reschasa. It's only aser from those things that are boiled. Omar koinim hayori lekedeir, on the other hand, if he says, I'm making a neder that I don't want to eat anything to do with goes into a pot, shani toya, I'm not even going to taste it, aser b'chol anasa b'kedeir is aser in anything that has to do with a pot. Now, it's lovely, it says Mishnah, and it says Gemara, so we know that this is a Mishnah. But for those of you who are paying attention, it wasn't that long ago, this is exactly the way the Mishnah on Mem Tes Amud Aleph finished. This is not, there's nothing new about these lines. This is exactly, we already have exactly these words printed in the first Mishnah at the beginning of the parak. So, a lot of Mefarshim simply say that this is a printing mistake. This is a printing mistake. That just like five lines above we had by Delas HaRamutza, where we had, two dots separating out the quote from the Mishnah and then we explained the Mishnah. This also was intended to be similar type of idea that there should be two dots before and two dots after, that it's not really meant as another Mishnah, because it's not another Mishnah, because we already quoted it. Either that, or it's printed by mistake on Mem Tes, but I think this is very interesting. There seems to be some sort of typo in the Gemara, when the Gemara went to print, that they wrote the words Mishnah and Gemara before and after this quote, because we already had it earlier. However, at the same time, here is where on Daf Nun Aleph, here is where the Ran and all the other Mefarshim explain what these words mean. What makes it even more fascinating is the fact that Rashi on the Mishnah on Mem Tes has one pshat, and Rashi over here on Daf Nun Aleph gives a different pshat to the same words. Now, not that they contradict each other, but he explains different points. So we see that it was even for Rashi, the fact that he made a comment over here and he made a comment over there, in Rashi's version of his Gemara, also there was, or the Pirish, the Mefarish, also had these words printed twice. But again, the fact that they were printed twice doesn't mean, or written twice, doesn't mean that it was necessarily meant as a new Mishnah. It's not meant as a new Mishnah, it's just quoting the old Mishnah, or it's meant to be written over here, wasn't meant to be written over there, however you want to learn. But I think that's a fascinating anomaly that comes up in our Gemara. It has nothing to do with the Pshat, but you have to realize the printing wasn't perfect either. Okay, in any event, the point of the quote of the Mishnah that we just read. Now, the Gemara is going to explain these words. Tanya, we learned in the Braisa. Hanoider min hayoyred likadeiro. Somebody makes a neder specifically on something that goes into a pot. Aser biyoyred leilfis. He is also aser to eat those things that go into a frying pan. An ilfis is a lower, has a lower ledge type of pot. Shekvar yored likadeiro koidem sheyored leilfis. Because it went into the cooking pot before it went into the frying pot. Apparently that's the way they used to prepare things, is they used to cook it a little bit first. They would cook it first and then put it into a frying pan. An example of this, if you want to try to kind of follow the concept, is, it's not quite exactly the same, but it's similar, is like a hot dog. Right? Think about a hot dog. When you buy a hot dog in the store, technically those hot dogs are already cooked. Even the frozen packages that you buy, they're technically cooked. You can theoretically take them right out of the package and eat them right there. They're not raw. They're already slightly cooked. But then, we take them and we put them on the grill. Now, some people also boil them, but let's just, for argument's sake, for purposes of explanation of this tomorrow, you take your hot dog and you throw it on the grill. Now, is that considered cooked, or is that considered grilled? Okay, because on the one hand it was cooked first, on the other hand it was then put into the frying pan. So the Gemara's chiddush over here is, again, and I'm using that as a mussel, I know it's not a perfect mussel, but just to get the concept, you see that if I made a neder that I'm not going to eat something that's cooked, the fact that I later put it onto a frying pan doesn't change the fact that it was in fact cooked. On the other hand, the Gemara continues and says, "Menayered leilfus." Let's say my neder was that I'm only assering those things that went into a frying pan. That's what I'm assering. I don't want fried food. So then, mutter biyered lekedera. Then I could eat those things that went cooked, that are cooked. Okay, so if I could take my fried chicken, but if first it was boiled, I took my boiled chicken from the chicken soup and then I fried it. But here he's saying I only want to eat, asser those things that are fried. Okay, I can certainly hear a lot of people don't eat fried food. So I'm assering fried. So even the way the Ran explains is like this. Even though I cooked it in a way that it wasn't fully prepared, it was meant to be fried, so you would think of it as a fried food. Not that it was literally physically fried, but it was meant to be a fried food, and it's considered a fried food. Here it's not considered a fried food, because I have not yet fried it. All I did was cook it. And if my neder was specifically that I'm only assering those things that are fried, this wasn't fried. So it's not going to be asser. Okay, the Gemara then continues. Min hanasa pigadeiro, if I say those things, those things that are made in a pot, mutter benasa beilfis. Then it's mutter and those things that are made. Now I use the word, the first time I said yoyrid likadeir, anything that goes into a pot. So even if it touched a pot for a little bit, that's already a problem. Here I'm saying nasa begadeira. When I use the word nasa begadeira, what I mean is what is prepared in a pot. Prepared in a pot means that's how I finish it. When I finish it off, right? Let me give you a different example just to illustrate the point. Do you, when you eat a bagel, do you think of a bagel as something that's cooked or something that's baked? Now, if you know how to make bagels, the way to make bagels is you prepare the dough, you cook it first, and then you bake it.
Try it, no?
And then bagels?
In water,
yeah. They boil it first, and then they bake it. Now, when you eat a bagel, most of us, in our mind anyway, I can't talk for everybody, but most of us think that bagels are baked. They come out of the oven. You don't think about the fact that, well, first it was cooked, so I guess that's considered a cooked food. So when you say nasa bikadeira, you mean anything that was prepared finally, it was, you know, it comes out of the pot and served from the pot. So then mutter benasa beilfis, so then it's mutter in those things that are made in a frying pan, meaning that are finished off in the frying pan, because those are considered fried foods, not cooked food. Menanasa beilfis, similar, same idea. If I say I'm only assering those things that are made in a frying pan, mutter benasa begdeiro, then it would be mutter for me to eat those things that are finished off in a cooking pot, even though, again, it was prepared for the sake of frying it eventually. It hasn't been fried yet, it's going to be mutter. Okay. So, Gemara finishes off on the bottom of the Yomid. Also, hanoider min hayoyrid letanor. If I say that I'm assering those things that go into an oven, ain't aser ela bapas. What I mean is, what goes into an oven? Bread. Bread goes into an oven. However, vim omar kol maisatana, whatever is made by the oven, alai, that's what's aser. So aser b'chol anasim betana, then it's aser in anything that is made by an oven. So, you have to understand, in those days, the ovens were like these round, think about an old pizza oven, not the new metal ones, but the old round pizza oven. So the way they used to take is they took the bread and they slapped it onto the side of the, like a pita. I don't know if you've ever seen how they prepare pitas. They put it inside the oven. And that's what's considered litaner. Yoyrid litaner goes into the oven. So therefore that's what I mean. I mean bread. As opposed to the oven might have a stack, might have a smokestack, or have it, the oven, besides the fact that it's hot inside, it also generates heat that you could create a stove, right? In the olden days, they used to have an oven on the bottom, and then they used to have like little outlets for the heat to escape on the top, and that was your stove. So it wasn't made in the oven. So if I say I want it in the oven, so I'm referring to bread. But if I'm referring to anything that's made by the oven, so then it's even those things that are made by, generated from the heat that are on top. That's the Gersa we have over here. I want to point out that the Ritva actually flips the Gersa, and he says Yerid Litanor is referring to anything, and Nasa Bitanor is Dafka bread. Okay, the Ran has a very interesting Gersa, the way to look at it. Okay, same idea though. The point is, what am I trying to include in the oven versus the heat of the oven? Okay, that takes us to now we are up to the next Mishnah, the next real Mishnah, Anun Aleph. Amud Beis, top of the Amud. Now the Mishnah on the top of Nun Aleph Amud Beis says as follows: Mina Kovush. If somebody says I'm assering myself from those things that are pickled, Eina aser ela min hakavash shel yerek. He means those things that are vegetables that are pickled. Like we just say, pickle. What is a pickle? Pickle is a vegetable. So that is your classic example. Okay, so the Ran is two pshatim. Let me just read the next words in the Mishnah to show you the two pshatim. Kavash sha'ani toyim. If I say pickled, that I will not taste anything pickled. Osur b'chol haklushim, then it's osur anything that is pickled. It doesn't have to be necessarily vegetables. It could be meat, could be chicken, could be anything else that is pickled. So the Ran is two basic pshatim. What's the difference between the first case and the second case? The first pshat that the Ran says is because I have a hay. It's ha-kavush, the thing that is pickled. As opposed to the second part of the Mishnah where it says kavush, pickled, whatever it is pickled, not anything specific. That's one distinction. The other distinction that the Ran says as a secondary pshat is the fact that I said the word sha'ani toyim. When I add in the words that I'm going to taste, so if I'm adding in those words, sha'ani toyim, then I mean to include anything that has that pickling taste to it. Okay, so those are the two pshatim that could go consistently throughout the next couple of Mishnayos. So the Mishnah continues, min ha-shaluk, I'm answering the thing that is overcooked, and asur ela min ha-shaluk shel basar is referring to meat, because you cook that separately. If I say shaluk sha'ani toyim, again, same idea, I don't have the hay, and also I add the word sha'ani toyim, asur b'chol ha-shalukim, then I'm asur for everything that is cooked, and as the Ran points out interestingly, and also if I overcook a bunch of things together, which is usually not the process. That's the first mission. The Gemara quickly comments and says, Amalei Rav Acha, Berei de Rav Avoya, the Rav Ashi, says to Rav Ashi, Omar Dikovish. What if I say, the pickled, or the thing that is pickled, my. Dishalik my, ditzli my, which is the next Gemara, dimiliach, which is also the next Mishnah, my. What are the cases? Heichon mashma, what do they mean? Do they mean to be specific or do they mean to be general? Tiboy, this is a question. So again, according to the Ran, that the distinction between the first case and the second was the hay. So basically what the Gemara is asking is, by the hay, it's clear that I mean the thing that is pickled, the ultimate, the epitome of what is pickled. When I use a dalid, is the fact that I'm throwing an extra letter in there, is that also coming to distinguish that special thing? Or not? Because it's the wrong letter, but I am adding something. And again, this is according to the second pshat, also, toyim, sha'ani toyim, again, what was the point? The point was I said something extra. So the dalid also is something extra. So did I mean, therefore, to include more things, or did I mean to include less things? And since this is not the, so to speak, the normal average way of speaking, the Gemara leaves it off with a question, did I mean something more by adding something extra, or not? Or did I really still mean the basics, which is cooked, pickled is pickled, and that's, I mean, the pickled thing. Okay, that's how the Ran explains this Gemara. Now the next Mishnah continues on a similar vein. Hatzli, any aser min hatzli shel basar. If I say that I'm asering myself from the thing that is grilled, roasted, so then I mean meat. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Now this is a very interesting. The Mishnah just throws this in here. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. There's nobody seems to be arguing on Rabbi Yehuda. So there are those Mefarshim that learn that the Chachamim argue on Rabbi Yehuda specifically in this case of Tzli. There are those that say that Rabbi Yehuda is really the Tana of this entire Mishnah, and therefore the Chachamim are arguing on this entire Mishnah. And it makes a nafkamina lahalacha, because we're going to paskin like the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehuda. So if Rabbi Yehuda is limited to Tzli, and we're arguing on that, that means we only disagree with this one line in the Mishnah. As opposed to if Rabbi Yehuda now becomes the Tana of the entire Mishnah and we disagree, then we would disagree with the entire next half of the Mishnah, or the next line in the Mishnah. In any event, it's a very interesting Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, and we don't have a machloikas over here, but the Mishnah makes a point of saying this is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. As opposed to Tzli Sha'ani Toyim, once again, similar type of construct, if I say anything that is roasted, I'm not tasting anything that's roasted, Asa B'chala Tzluyim, then it means anything that's roasted. It doesn't matter. It could be roasted vegetables. It doesn't have to be meat necessarily. Similar, in another case, min amaliach, the thing that is salted, hein asur ela min amaliach shel dag, then I mean fish. Because that was the common thing, that was fish was salted to preserve it. Maliach sha'ani toyim, once again, if I don't say the hay and I add the word sha'ani toyim, anything that is salted, asur b'chol ha-maluchim, then it's anything that is salted, which would include, for example, salami. Right? Because those things are meant to preserve. That's what the people crossing the ocean used to eat for 3 months or 6 months. They would salt their meat and keep it. Salt their fish and they would keep it. Okay. Fine. Now, one fascinating side topic that the Mishnah brings in. Dog, dogim. What if I say the word dog and dogim? The way the Ron learns is the word dog is referring to one large fish that I would buy independently, as opposed to dogim means a bunch of little fish that I would buy many of them together. So what if the guy says both of them? He says, dog, dogim, shani toyim, that I'm not going to eat any fish, big or a lot or many, one or many. Osir behen ben gedolim ben ketanim, whether they're big or little, ben meluchim ben tefelim, whether they're salted or unsalted, ben chayim ben mevushalim, whether they're raw or they're not, or they're cooked. Okay? So, umutter betris trufa ubetzir. And then, but it would be mutter in fish that are cut up, and the juice of the fish. Now the point of the Mishnah here is that when I say the word dog and dogim, I mean whole, complete fish. Therefore, chopped up pieces of fish are not included. So the herring you buy over here, it would not be included over here because that's a chopped up piece of fish and certainly not the juice because I said specifically the fish. Now, there's a very interesting discussion which we're not going to get into, but I just want to highlight for you. The fact that the Mishnah says that this includes whether it's cooked or not cooked, apparently in the times of the Gemara and times of the Mefarshim, they did not eat raw fish. I know nowadays sushi is very popular, but in the times of the Mefarshim, they did not eat raw fish. So they got into this concept of, can I make a neder on something that I'm not supposed to eat in the first place? Can I really make that usur? Do I really mean to include something that I would never do in the first place? Or does my neder only include those things that are included? So the fact that the Mishnah refers to raw fish, which is something that I wouldn't naturally eat anyway, and the Mishnah specifically points out that that's going to be usur, so we see that we are including the isur even on things that I wouldn't naturally do. An interesting discussion over here. There are obviously those that argue and say, no, the Mishnah's just throwing it in. It doesn't really mean to make the point because we're talking about all the opposites. Okay, again, as I said, we're not going to get further into the discussion. But it is an interesting point that gets brought up over here. Okay, so we talked about full fish versus cut up fish. Then the Mishnah continues and says, "Hanoidim mitzachono." If now I make a neder from the cut up slices of fish, so aser betris trufa. It's aser for me to eat chopped up pieces of fish. Umuter betzir marayas, but it's still permissible for me to eat the juice. And marayas is where you add in the tzir. Tzir doesn't just mean the juice. It means that they used to keep little tiny pieces of fish in the juice to give it the taste, to give it the flavor. Marias is like the water that it's cooked in, let's say. So that's going to be mutter, because when I say pieces of fish, I mean real pieces of fish, not tiny little things just to give taste. However, hanoidim mitris trufa, if I specifically say that I'm asering from pieces of fish, also batir marais, now I'm even aser on the juices, because the juices include little pieces of fish that are giving the taste to the juice, so that's going to include everything. If I broke down my nether to mean every little piece, then it includes every little piece, even if the pieces are really not the point or not the significance. The juice is what's important. It's still lamaisa, the pieces are there, so it's going to make the juice usur. The Gemara now continues. Tanya, we learned in the Brayso of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer. Dog she'ena she'ani toyim. If a person says, I'm not eating a fish, so then usur b'gedoylim u'mutar b'ketanim. If I say a fish, I mean a big fish that I would buy separately, a whole big fish, and I do not mean little fish. So again, to illustrate the point, and this is for illustration purposes only, it's not to define the Gemara, but let's say we're talking about a white fish, a whole white fish, or a big tuna fish, versus sardines. Okay, so when I say that I'm eating, nobody eats one sardine. Okay, when you talk about sardines, usually you think in your mind about a can of sardines, a whole bunch of sardines. Okay, so when I say I'm assering a fish, I mean a bigger fish, not the little fish. However, dogo shani toyim, if I say a dogo, when I use that word, so then asar b'katanim u'mutar b'gedolim. So the word dogo, apparently, a fishy. When I say a fishy, what do I mean by fishy? So I mean a little fish, a goldfish. I mean a little fish as opposed to, and I do not mean the big fish, because I'm only asking the little fish. But if I say if I say both, shani toim, osar ben b'gedolim ben b'katanim, then I taka mean both, and it doesn't mean anything more than that. I mean to include big and little. Okay, but we've now made a point of saying that the word dog means big, and the word doga means little. So the Gemara then asks very specifically, Amar Papala Abaya, Mimai de dog shani toyim godolhu. How do we know that the word dog necessarily means that it is large? Tachsid, I'll bring you a pasuk. It says, Vayimein Hashem dog godol livloyes yoinu. Of course, the Maftir of Yoinu, which we just read recently, that on Yom Kippur, so that Hashem prepared a big, large fish, to swallow Yoina. Okay, so we see that in the context of using the word dog, it says gadol, that it is big. Okay, so of course the Maloy Roim asks, and this is an obvious question: if the word dog by itself meant big, then why does the pasuk have to say gadol? Should just say the fact that it says gadol actually undermines our whole point. If the word dog means the fact that it was able to swallow Yonah by definition means that it was large. I mean, unless Yonah was a tiny little, you know, menchi, he was I would imagine, and in fact we know that Nevi'im in general were larger, were taller. That's one of the things that a Navi is supposed to be, bigger and larger than an average sized person. So he was a large person, so if the fish ate him, must have been a very, very large fish. So the Maloy Roim answers, the Anachanami, when it comes to a pasuk that's describing something, that's okay, the pasuk will add a description to illustrate the point. But Anachanami, the word dog by itself is big, but the word godol is the adjective to just help explain it. But it does prove the point that dog is referring to a big fish. But the Gemara asks anyway a question on this. It also says that Yoina davened from a daga. It switches from dog to daga. So, and according to what we just said before, daga is supposed to refer to a small fish. So the Gemara answers, holoi kasha, dilma polta dog gadol. What happened was the larger fish that initially swallowed Yoina was big. Ubalei dog katon, and then a smaller fish swallowed Yoina. Okay, now, a lot of mafarshim that talk about this, what happened over here. But basically, everybody agrees that what happened was that Yonah was initially swallowed by a very large fish, and the fish took him around. The Midrashim tell us that the fish took him around to all the whole ocean, and Yonah really enjoyed it very much. The problem was that he was supposed to be davening to Hashem, and he wasn't davening. So Hashem arranged for the larger fish to spit him out, and then the smaller fish swallowed him. And apparently also was a female fish, which was pregnant and had a lot of other things going on in there. So Yoina was very uncomfortable, and that's when he started davening, which is what Hashem ultimately wanted from Yoina. He wanted him to daven. In any event, the point is that even though obviously the second fish that swallowed Yoina must have been also obviously very large in order to be able to swallow him, but here you can already see that there's a relativity. There's a relativity. There's the bigger fish and the smaller fish. So when we refer to the smaller fish, again, it could be in proportion, but the proportions were that Daga is referring to a smaller fish. Okay. The Gemara still has another question. Eleve hadaga asher b'yaor meso. This is talking about b'makas dam. The pasuk tells us that the fish in the sea, in the Nile, all died. So the Gemara asks, Tana mesu gedolim lai mesu? What do you mean? So we use the word daga, which we already established means small fish. So you're telling me only the small fish died, but the bigger fish didn't die? How could that be? The whole place was blood. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela daga mashma gedolim u mashma katana. The word daga could refer to big or little. Ubenedarim, once again, our famous favorite line, Ubenedarim holach achaloshim b'day adam. But when you're talking, this is what people mean. When people say daga, and again in English I would use the word a fishy. When the kids talk about a fishy, they're not talking about a whale. You don't refer to a whale as a fishy. A whale is a huge fish, you refer to that's a fish. But when you talk about a goldfish and you see goldfish swimming, oh, look at the little fishy. So you would use the word again in Hebrew, daga. Alright, so in conclusion, dog means big, daga in this context means smaller. Finally, we'll finish with the Gemara on right before the Mishnah. The Gemara says, "Hanoider min tzachana." So one of the things that the Mishnah listed was, if I say, I don't want to eat even small chopped up pieces of fish, that's going to include only the pieces of fish, but it won't include the juices. So, Omar le Ravina le Ravashi, so Ravina says, Omar hare alai tzichin mai. Tiboy. So now, when I say tzichin, which is not the right lashon, tzachana means small fish, pieces of fish. Now, small pieces of fish apparently give off a give off a larger smell. Like you open up that can of sardines, you smell it, right? Everybody knows you can't eat tuna. Can't eat tuna fish in a public place because, you know, everybody smells it. When you say tzichin, now you're talking about a bunch of little things together, and it's talking about the juices and all these things mixed together. So the question is that what you mean also? Because it doesn't have, so to speak, the same effect or the same impact that the small fish that Tzachana is naturally referring to. So do I mean the small fish? Do I mean to include everything or not? And the Gemara leaves that with a question, because again, I'm not using the lashon of something that would refer to a specific point that the Gemara, that the person was trying to make. Okay. We'll stop over here for now.